Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. That's the theme song for the Columbus Crew, which has made its home in Ohio's capital city since its founding, since the team's founding, I should say, in 1994. The Crew was the first charter member of Major League Soccer, and MAPFRE Stadium was the league's first soccer-specific venue. Now, Crew owner Anthony Precourt is contemplating a move to Austin, Texas. He wants more fans, and he wants a new downtown stadium. Andrew Erickson covers the Columbus Crew for the Columbus Dispatch. He joins us now in the studio. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Were you caught off guard?
I think by the timing, I think, you know, if you zoom out and look at the financials, you know, where the stadium is in comparison to the rest of the league, where the club felt attendance was going directionally, I think that part of it wasn't all that surprising that this would be considered at some point. You saw the things like the trademark for a couple Austin team names come about a month and a half ago. No direct link to the Crew there, but I think there are only two or three teams that would fit that profile of a relocation. And so when you put all the pieces together, it's not all that surprising. But I think in this exact moment and when it came, I think was a surprise.
Why in this exact moment?
Well, from Anthony Precourt, the investor operator owner of Crew SC, it's a sense of urgency that they felt like this was an important issue that needed to be discussed now. They recognize that the team is in the midst of its first 9-game unbeaten streak since 2009. The playoffs are right around the corner. They're playing a game on Sunday in New York that could get them as high as the 2 seed in the Eastern Conference. So in that sense, it's not great timing. And I think Anthony Precourt recognized that, but it is still very curious.
Fans, Crew fans, anybody who has an interest in professional sports in Central Ohio, if you have strong feelings about this, you want to have a question maybe for my guest, Andrew Erickson of the Columbus Dispatch, you can give us a call this hour, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Now, Anthony Precourt, let's talk a little bit about him. He's not from here. He's just a big investor. That's what he does. This was just something he bought. He doesn't care where he wears this pair of pants. Ultimately, he's not enamored with Columbus.
He's from the Bay Area, has a background in energy investments, and that's, you know, where he has his money from. But when he came to Columbus in 2013, mentioned that this was a place he wanted to stay, the Hunts felt that,
they all say that.
So that is important to note. He has noted an affinity for Austin. He's spoken at South by Southwest. He likes the demographics of Austin. He talks about that being a growing market. So specifically to Columbus, there isn't that attachment. And I can tell you, you know, the last time I saw Anthony Precourt in person, and that doesn't mean the last time he was in Columbus, was March 30th. So there hasn't been a whole lot of attendance this year specifically. So I guess that would be a cause for concern if you're a Columbus Crew SC fan.
We're talking about the possible departure of the Columbus Crew from Columbus. They won't be called the Columbus Crew anymore. My guest is Andrew Erickson of the Columbus Dispatch. If you have a question or comment, once again, 614-292-8513. What about the fans?
I think it's a sad moment for a lot of people. As soon as this news came out Monday night, I had a lot of fans reach out to me via Twitter, email, kind of telling their stories about, my dad took me to games. I take my son to games. I'm disappointed I can't take my newborn to games. This is generational. When you talk about 22 years in Columbus, this is an event for the soccer community. People have grown around this team. People have been at games since they were at the Horseshoe at Ohio State. So I think there was a lot of disappointment and a lot of sadness because for a lot of people, this was their social activity. You have people who might not normally have been involved in something, taking on leadership roles in fan groups or supporters councils and things like that. So I think it meant a lot more than just a soccer team to a lot of people.
But the attendance numbers are bad. They're 20th out of 22 in the league. Why?
I think that's a good question. And I think attendance is always the million-dollar question with teams. What amenities can you offer? What convenience of parking can you offer? Columbus Crew SC does have the lowest average ticket price in MLS, and still they have these attendance problems. Mm-hmm. I've seen a lot of theories, and I think it's partially related to this, that the team's struggles last year on the field, they were 8-14-12 and finished second to last in the Eastern Conference, led to a lot of people maybe being reserved in terms of buying tickets, not being as eager to go to games earlier in the season, so it got the team off to a slow start.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at weekend home games, I think from home games 10 to 17, they were above 17,000 for all of those games. So it picked up later in the year, but they got off to a really slow start, and that's why it was so poor this year.
So those home games that you just mentioned, those should tell us there's certainly potential in
right.
Central Ohio for this.
Right, and the first 2 to 3 years of the rebrand, attendance increase year over year. I don't know about television ratings. I know they're down 20% this year, television viewership. But you look at attendance year over year had been increasing this year, and a part of me thinks it is related to results, took a step back this year. So I think, you know, if you're Anthony Precourt, you're looking at that and saying, well, we don't want to take a step back as a franchise. That being said, the team having the success it has this year, you wonder if it would have increased next year. But now with it would seemingly a couple bridges burned in Columbus, you know, what that attendance will look like next year, I'm not sure.
Do you think this is pretty much a done deal, that this is sort of window dressing when he says we're thinking about it, we're looking at Austin? Do you think, you know, there's lots of people out of cynics out there who say, oh, come on, this is a done deal. Looked like in a column today in the paper, they said as much.
Well, you know, and Anthony Precourt, I believe, told a reporter in Austin that there's been outreach since, I think, 2016 about this. I think the pieces are certainly there. And you mentioned the breadcrumbs. You know, if you follow that path, it's certainly there. Crazier things have happened. Stadium deals could come together at the last minute. Offers can be made at the last minute. We were talking.
But he said he doesn't want a free stadium.
Right.
That's what he said.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, he would have to find private money in Austin. Now, to what extent he has that already, we don't know. How much he needs, we don't know. What area specifically in town he's looking at, we don't know. So there's still those questions to be answered before this is a done deal.
But we do know that Austin is a super cool city.
Right.
It does not have any kind of major pro team.
Right.
And it's also a very expensive place to live now.
Right. I was talking with an Austin real estate developer this morning that said that downtown square footage pricing in Austin is 3 times more expensive than what it is in downtown Columbus. You're looking at not a lot of available land, you know, potentially East Austin. The Austin American Statesman building, which is an 18.9 acre site, was sold recently and could be a site for mixed use development. But these are all still unknowns. And like you said, it's a very, very expensive city to build anything.
Yeah. What about the soccer culture there?
I think it's good. I think you have an American Outlaws chapter there. You have people who go to bars on Saturday mornings and watch English Premier League games, watch Bundesliga games. So there is soccer support, but the only soccer-specific result we have there is of the Austin Aztecs, a USL Pro franchise, which was affiliated with the Columbus Crew in 2015, folding due to financial concerns. Now, they didn't have a soccer-specific stadium,
mm-hmm.
But that's all we have to go off of. And Anthony Precourt described those two things as apples to oranges, but it's the only result on record so far.
Right. MAPFRE Stadium, what's it like? I mean, what's it like now? How many, 18 years in or?
Opened in 1999, yeah.
Okay.
You go around to venues in the rest of the league, and it's considerably older. Toronto FC has a beautiful 25,000-person stadium. Philadelphia, Chicago both have $100 million stadiums. It's very clear when you walk around and you see the concrete in this stadium compared to the other stadiums in the league that it's a step behind. Now, is it crumbling? No. I think that part of it's exaggerated. I think you can still play soccer there. Players always tell you the grounds, the specific, you know, green space in the stadium is much better than it is in a lot of other stadiums. So, you know, you can still play soccer there, but from a luxury standpoint and a nice feeling and something that would attract somebody who might not normally go to a soccer game, I think that's not quite there.
There's also the just where it's located. It's
right.
So isolated from everything.
Yeah, and you hear people.
There's a tailgating culture there, but
exactly.
Beyond that.
But a person who, you know, would say, hey, let's go to this area of town to go see a soccer game, I'm not sure if there's any walk up in terms of, you know, ticket purchases or things like that. And that's what you'd be looking for. And I think that's something where you know, the Columbus Clippers, for example, do very well because there are people downtown or people eating dinner saying, hey, let's go to a Clippers game. I don't think there's that much with the crew. You hear people talk about how difficult it is to get in and out of the parking lot.
Yeah.
How rerouting after games has been very difficult. People sometimes have to wait 45 minutes to an hour. It's late on a school night sometimes when that happens. So from a family attending a game, you know, scenario, which is where you get a lot of ticket purchases, I think that's where the crew has maybe fallen behind.
Let's talk about the Buckeyes. There's actually some lines in the crew theme song or fight song or whatever you want to call it that say, you know, who cares about the Buckeyes, something like that. You know, they don't matter as much as people think, something like that.
Yeah.
That's been argued as a problem for the Blue Jackets, too, is that the Buckeyes were too big. There's sort of a vacuum for that in a way
right.
in Austin. There's not the competition for fans.
Well, UT Austin would be a big. I mean,
that's a big
Texas football. Football is everything in Texas.
Okay.
So in that sense, they are quite similar.
All right.
So you could almost pair the two and say, well, if UT Austin football and football is maybe even bigger in Texas than it is in Ohio. I don't want to upset anybody by saying
yeah.
that, but. You know, they are comparable in that sense.
Okay.
There's no professional sports franchise in Austin outside of the Round Rock Express, which is a AAA baseball franchise north of the city. But, you know, I think in some cases that's overblown. If you're Columbus Crew SC and you're claiming to be Ohio's team, there are certainly areas outside of Columbus that you can draw fans from. Now, you know, it's very difficult when you have a Saturday night kickoff on the same day as an Ohio State football game to expect fans to go to both, but those instances are few and far between. So I think you can have your separate culture. You can have your separate fan base that still works. I think there are people who support both. So I think in some ways that's an excuse.
It's certainly been found to be the case that you can do both with the Jackets.
Right.
Jackets fans are renowned now, I think.
Right.
Anthony Precourt spent the day in Austin yesterday again. What was he looking at? It was
mostly media appearances from what I understand, mm-hmm. and it was selling the Austin to MLS excitement. Not a whole lot of questions answered on that front in terms of timeline, where specifically they're looking for a stadium outside of the quote-unquote urban fabric of Austin. So that part is a little bit difficult, and not a whole lot new came out of yesterday. They had a few people on an advisory council that I guess were helping out with media appearances yesterday. But not a whole lot that was new specifically with this.
We are talking about the possible departure of the Columbus Crew from Columbus. It'll have to change its name, I guess. My guest is Ander Erickson with the Columbus Dispatch. He covers the Crew for the Dispatch. We're going to talk about the economic impact of all of this. What kind of impact has the Crew had on the region, and what might be the impact be if the Crew departs? So stay with us. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513. You could email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can check out our Facebook page and post a question or comment there. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Columbus Crew owner Anthony Precourt announced this week that he is strongly considering relocating the team to Austin, Texas. The news arrived as the Crew gears up for the MLS playoffs, and Crew fans are not amused. They are meeting this Sunday for a rally downtown. For more information, you can check out the link on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. We're talking about the impact the team has had on the region and what the impact could be if and or when the team departs. Still with us is Columbus Crew beat reporter for the Columbus Dispatch, Andrew Erickson. And joining us by phone is Columbus Business First reporter, Laura Newpoff. Welcome to the show, Laura.
Hi, thanks.
Attendance is poor. The Crew ranks 20th out of 22 MLS teams in per-game attendance this season. How would a move downtown change that equation? What do we know about the impact of moving downtown, let's say, for the Clippers?
You know, I think there would be a lot more energy for the team if they moved to a place like the Arena District. You can draw a direct comparison to the vibe, you know, that was at Cooper Stadium with the team and sort of what you have now, you know, with a mixture of different venues. So I think if, you know, if there were a Crew Stadium in the Arena District and the Scioto Peninsula, Franklinton, that, you know, that I think that would create more of a vibe for the team.
We have an email from Michael. He says, why is Precourt blaming local government? All the problems he listed at his press conference are things that only team management can control. Government can't and shouldn't do everything for business. Laura Neupoff, I mean, what is your sense about what Anthony Precourt is asking for?
My sense is that the train has left the station, and I think he's probably had his eye on Austin all along. Supposedly, there's an escape clause in his deal with the Hunt family. He was supposed to stay here for 10 years, but the one city that was mentioned that he could leave for was Austin. And so I think he's probably just wants to go there. And I don't know that it's anybody's fault here. He's been trying to sort of blame corporate support. But if you look on the Crew's webpage, they have a ton of corporate support.
And the fan base, not great, but partly that's due to, you know, how the seasons are going. And that's happened to the Jackets as well. But what about television? That's been, as Andrew Erickson mentioned earlier, down 20%.
I'm not really sure why. I couldn't really speak to that. What I can speak to is, you know, people around town do lament that location. There are no bars there to walk to, no restaurants. It's kind of an island unto itself. So attendance and interest in the team and things like that, I think, can specifically be tied to that site.
Mayor Andrew Ginther and the Columbus Partnership, that's a group of city business leaders, seemed stunned by this news. Some people are going to say they got caught with their pants down there. They just weren't paying attention to the signals. Could they have done anything?
You know, I've really, you know, I've struggled with this over the last few days. I think that Anthony Precourt does not want to be in Columbus. And if he's not going to engage with the mayor, what is the mayor to do? You know, he's down on a media tour in Austin. He has a website that he's, you know, tweeting from with excitement for Austin. So, you know, if he's just not into us, he's just not into us.
What has the Crew done for the region economically? I know they don't do game by game, but what about just in general? Is there any measurement?
Sure. You could take just the FIFA World Cup qualifier in 2016 with Mexico. That generated $5.5 million in direct visitor spending, and it brought people to Columbus from every state. And so without the Crew, you can't host games like that.
The Columbus Partnership offered to literally pay for 50% of the team. That offer was rejected. Is there a chance?
Yeah, and they actually would buy the entire team to keep it here.
And that was rejected.
Yes.
So obviously it's considered a going concern then.
I don't think there's anything that the Columbus Partnership or Mayor Ginther can do when you have an owner who is completely intent on going somewhere else.
Andrew Erickson, is there any possibility that there could be an expansion and Columbus could get another team sometime?
I think that's highly unlikely. You're looking at...
That's a league that's already
right.
Pretty
so,
thin. Yeah.
Just to give you some context, LAFC enters a league next year. The David Beckham owned Miami franchise is set to join the league potentially a year after, maybe two. And then you have four expansion teams, which there are 12 cities vying for, not one of those cities being Austin, that should enter the league, I would say, by around 2022. It would be hard to imagine them joining the league after that. But then you're at a league of 28 teams. Now, it would be hard to envision MLS expanding beyond that. And then if they did expand beyond that, that Columbus would get one of those teams.
Why?
I think when you look at media market size, you see a market like a Nashville or a Phoenix, for example, and those are in San Diego, which
more
just
southern. You're giving me all southern cities,
right? Well, or San Diego that just lost a professional sports franchise and is in theory hungry for another sport.
Uh huh.
I think there, and we're speaking in hypotheticals here, but would be a chance for Columbus to get something like a United Soccer League franchise, which is the second tier of professional soccer in American sports, but. I think it would be very hard for MLS to come back if Columbus Crew SC were to cease to exist here.
You know, Laura Newpoff, what does this mean for the city psychologically when you have a team depart like this? Columbus is supposed to be this up-and-coming region. They're making a bid for Amazon, blah, blah, blah. I mean, you know, and now the Crew departs. What does that say? What's the signal there?
I do think it would be a psychological blow. I don't think it would be such a financial blow. I think most of the people that are going to the games are from around here, and it's not necessarily a big tourist draw. But I think it would be a blow to the ego. And, you know, we're a charter team. You know, the history of the league starts here.
Right.
And so it would not be good for our image. But Columbus is I think Columbus will be fine without the Crew as far as a sports town goes. I mean, we have professional hockey and, you know, all the other things we have. But, yeah, I think city leaders are very upset, angry right now. And, this is hard.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the potential and probable at this point departure of the Columbus Crew from not just Matt Free Stadium, but from the entire state. The owner, Anthony Precourt, is looking at seriously and is in Austin at this very moment doing media rounds with the media, building up steam for this potential move. We'd like to hear from fans. What do you think? 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And Joan in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Joan.
Hi.
Go ahead.
I'm listening to all this, you know, feeling sorry for ourselves. Why don't we take the initiative here in Columbus? Why don't we make this a soccer city? Why don't we have special scholarships and special attention to soccer teams in the high schools? Now, I bet you that soccer is sort of a third sport, but we could make it a first sport by attention and by some investment so that when people think of soccer, they think of Columbus because we've taken the initiative to make it that.
So you think that they've fallen short so far on that score?
Well, I don't see much attention to soccer. You know, it's just sort of something you do if you don't want to play football.
Hmm.
And that's another point, you know, in terms of safety and so forth.
Hmm.
But there's lots of angles that we could exploit to make this soccer city.
Andrew Erickson, what do you think? I mean, does Joan have a point that Columbus just didn't invest enough in the sport?
Yeah, that's hard to say.
It's not much of a soccer city.
Yeah, I mean, you have kids just like in every other major city playing at the club level. You have major clubs like Eagles and Santos that a lot of kids join. I think one element to this and something we'll have to explore in the future is there are, you know, dozens, hundreds of kids in the Columbus Crew SC Academy that will not be moving with this team to Austin. What happens to the soccer development of these players, of these kids, when the team moves? You have kids suddenly without a soccer home who, in theory, would be on track to a Division I soccer scholarship. So where do those kids go? These are, a lot of them, the future of youth soccer, of developmental soccer in Columbus. So where do these kids go, I think, is a question that's still to be answered at this point.
Hmm. Hmm. Joan, thanks a lot for your call. Travis and Bexley are on the air. Hi, Travis.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking the call. I've been a Crew fan since I was 12. I went to the very first game in Ohio Stadium. And I think, the heart of the Columbus Crew is the fact that this is where soccer started in America. This is where it had to catch on first before they knew it could catch on other places. That's why we have the first soccer-specific stadium. And I wanted to hear your comments about the nationwide support we're going to receive from MLS supporters groups on Sunday, because essentially other teams are realizing if this can happen in Columbus, it can happen to other teams.
Is there talk about that, Andrew?
Well, yeah, I think you have fans who are concerned about that. One thing I've seen across social media is you have supporters groups changing the logos of their teams to black and gold as a sign of solidarity with Carrissi.
Oh, okay.
So they're joining. There's a hashtag Save the Crew. That's become a larger thing. But to the caller's point, I remember talking with Alexi Lawless, who's a Fox soccer analyst, about the first game at Mafra Stadium in 1999 when it was the first soccer-specific stadium. You know, he said he looked at the TV and thought, this has to be a foreign country. There's no way this could happen in the United States. So I think there's a lot of recognition now of people looking back and saying, well, this is where professional soccer started in America. You know, this is where we've had our first soccer-specific stadium, and now you see the development after that in other cities. But I think people recognize that it started in Columbus, and so there's a sense of sadness over that.
Is there any question, and Lauren Upoff, chime in, I mean, that this has been a badly managed franchise, if they didn't keep up the stadium properly, if they weren't working on renegotiating locations and that kind of thing all along?
You know, I don't know that it's a badly managed franchise. I think what you have is you have a California money man that bought the team, and he is not invested locally. He
right.
doesn't come here. I don't think he's invested in this city. And he really doesn't have any ties here. So I don't think that he cares about this city in a way that it really matters whether he's going to pull out or not.
All right, Travis, thanks a lot for that call. Sue in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Sue.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
As I was listening to your show, I was thinking in my mind, Franklinton, and then your guest mentioned Franklinton, and I just have a comment. I just don't think Franklinton really needs a professional sports stadium near it. So I'm just going to hang up, and thank you for taking my call.
Well, before you go, why?
Well, the community is just being inundated by, you know, folks coming in and buying up the properties of the lower income folks. And I just think having that huge sports thing coming in would just further destroy the community.
Yeah,
it's
they were talking
about history.
Yeah, we're talking about one of the sites being just west of Cosi downtown.
Yeah.
So okay.
I just like to put in a word for Franklinton. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Sue. Andrew Erickson, locations out there.
I mean, yeah, potential. Anthony Precourt made it very clear that Franklinton downtown or the Arena District
were must-haves.
Right, in order to keep the team in Columbus. So when you look at those areas, it would seemingly be very difficult. But, you know, Franklinton would have to be one they explore. That's unfortunate, as the caller mentioned, for potentially a lot of people.
Laura Newpoff, as far as real estate downtown, Andrew Erickson made the point earlier that he talked with a commercial real estate person down in Austin. Downtown Austin, the property values are three times what they are in Columbus, but Columbus is a lot more than it used to be.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and as far as like potential sites, if that's what you're getting mm-hmm. at, I mean, he could afford to build something here. It would be definitely much more affordable in Columbus than it would in Austin. There are not a lot of sites though, and some of the sites that are available, I can tell you that some of the developers are not interested in a stadium. So, with just maybe 3-4 locations, and then you take a developer that's not interested in having a stadium mm-hmm. on their location, and then you're really limiting, you know, the options for something like that.
Soccer stadiums take up a lot of space, right, Andrew?
Yeah, I mean, you'd be looking at least probably 20 acres. You know, you have to include parking and think about that as well. In addition to the fact that soccer stadiums continue to get more expensive, the one in D.C. and you know, the ones that have been built across the United States, you're looking at $125 to $150 million. So where that money comes from, I think, is another question as well.
Email from Matt asks what the odds are of league owners voting against the move. I understand Precourt needs a 2/3 vote to make the move.
You know, I don't I don't know that that's necessarily true. From my understanding, from a league standpoint and from an ownership standpoint, he does have considerable support. I know there was a report out of San Antonio that the league felt that Precourt has gone rogue with this move. You know, in terms of my conversations, they do support this. And the thing we have to understand about MLS is it's much more of a close-knit organization than maybe people realize. A lot of times, you know, teams pool money, you know, and if Crew SC were to be behind in terms of revenue than the rest of the league, that would impact the rest of the league. So they would want Anthony Precourt to be in a situation where he's bridging that revenue gap. He's able to afford to transfer players from abroad at a much higher rate than they have currently. And so he would have support from, you would think, other ownership and the rest of the league in that sense.
An email from Johnny. Oh, go ahead, Laura.
Oh, I was just going to jump in there real quick. You know, we have a report from last night, and as far as we can tell, Major League Soccer has been working hand in hand with Precourt to get a team in Austin. And it was Major League Soccer who first approached the mayor of Austin about this back in the summer.
Okay. An email from Johnny says, I've been a season ticket holder for 10 years and I am absolutely devastated. I have so many good memories and have made many good friends through the Crew. I'm very upset at Precourt, but I also believe that the MLS commissioner, Don Garber, really hates the Columbus market. Our metrics are not good, but they're not terrible either. No one cried when Chivas USA shuttered because their fan base numbered in the hundreds. There are 10,000 diehards that attend every game. Why is Garber treating us like Chivas USA? It's very short-sighted to always chase the shiny new toy.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. And I don't know if I would say surprised, but it was very clear how Commissioner Don Garber felt about the potential move, that they were 100% backing Anthony Precourt on this. So I was surprised in a sense to see that. They, as you did mention, they made it very clear in the press release and have made it very clear publicly that Columbus Crew SC is in the bottom 2-3, you know, near the bottom mm-hmm. of the league in terms of financial metrics, and they've made that known. So they're supportive of Anthony Precourt and whatever he does.
Randy in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Randy.
Hi. I had a comment regarding the Laura earlier mentioned the point about the television deal.
Yeah.
And my comment on that was basically after Precourt came in, there was an exclusive deal signed with Time Warner Sports, Time Warner Cable, to have all the games broadcast on the Time Warner Sports channel.
Mm-hmm.
And if you weren't on Time Warner, you were out of luck. You could not watch the games. And even with the MLS Live app and so forth, where people can stream the games, there was a blackout on that for 75 miles around the city. So even if you lived here, you still could not see the game unless you went.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the things that really limits the Crew viewership in terms of television is the fact that you had to be a Time Warner subscriber. That's changed a bit more recently. They have a deal with the CW Columbus, and they broadcast games. But still, nevertheless,
it was a building block deal, potential, you're saying. And
absolutely. Yeah. And then in terms of that also, with advertising on those networks, I watch religiously. I was a Time Warner subscriber at the time, so I still got to see the games, fortunately, but never saw any advertising whatsoever for the Crew outside of what the commentators were saying during the games. And so I think Precourt has, or not necessarily specifically Precourt himself, but team management in general has not really put a lot of money into the advertising for the Crew in the city outside of social media, and that's just an echo chamber for people who are already famous.
Right. Yeah, no, I know what you mean about the advertising, and because I watch the Dispatch, the Blue Jackets do a lot of advertising on their own, on their own dime. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, Randy, thank you so much for the call. Appreciate it.
Sure.
I have to say thanks and goodbye to our guests right now. Laura Newpoff, a reporter for the Columbus Business First. Thanks so much for joining us today, Laura. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
And also Andrew Erickson, Columbus Crew SC beat reporter for the Columbus Dispatch. Thanks for joining us. I appreciate it.
Of course. Thank you.
Coming up, we're going to get a little bit more of a macro view of the impact of sports events and venues on a city. So stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. The Columbus crew could be on the move. Crew owner Anthony Precourt announced Monday he is considering relocating the team to Austin, Texas. He's there right now. He wants a new downtown venue, not to mention more fans in the seats. And Austin is one of the only major cities in the U.S. without a pro sports team. It's a move that next to no one saw coming, apparently. Joining us now by phone is economist Victor Matheson. He teaches economics at College of the Holy Cross in Massachusetts, and he studies the economic impact of sports events and venues. Welcome to the show, Victor.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
You know, there's this idea that the team is expected to leave regardless of, you know, of anything at this point. And we were talking earlier about that psychology, you know, what a slap it is in the face of the city and how that might affect things going down the line. I mean, you know, Columbus is one of the bidders for Amazon, blah, blah, blah. I mean, does any of this is there a domino effect, I guess, is what I'm looking for.
So there may be a little bit of one. Certainly one of the things that makes cities attractive is the multitude of things that you can do in those cities. So what makes Columbus more attractive than Dayton, for example, is that it has more amenities for people. It has, you know, obviously great college sports. It has the NHL. It has MLS. It has cultural attractions, restaurants, all these things. What makes the city attractive is being able to offer these to potential workers and, of course, potential businesses coming in. Businesses know they need to attract high quality workers. One of the things that makes it easy to attract high-quality workers is surrounding yourself with fun things to do for those workers when they're not toiling away at the job.
There's always the school of thought that the city isn't big enough for more than one big team, and that is the Buckeyes. Of course, you know, the Blue Jackets have endured. What about that? What do we know about the equation of what a city can support when it comes to pro teams, or we should say big-time sports in general?
Yeah, so Major League Soccer, when it first came around, very specifically made a strategy that they were going to go into places that were either very large, so the New Yorks, the DCs, the Bostons, the LAs, or go to places that did not have other major sports, specifically going into places that didn't have Major League Baseball. So Columbus was actually a perfect city early on there because it was one of the largest cities in the United States without a professional sports team. It should be pointed out that in many, many ways, Austin is very, very similar to Columbus, right? Mm-hmm. A large city without professional sports, at least when the crew originally came. Of course, anchored by, you know, a big, large public university with, of course, big sports there. But very specifically, they went into those markets. Again, they've got very successful teams in Portland, in Vancouver without baseball, in Salt Lake City without baseball, in Montreal without baseball. So again, they've very much been targeting places where they're not competing for that sports fan's dollar. And of course, when you're talking about OSU sports, you know, nothing going on in the summer at OSU. So that makes, you know, that's a pretty good market because where else is the sports fan going to go in the summer? So in some ways, Columbus is a pretty good market, again, not because it's so big, but because it doesn't have a lot of other competition for the crew, and at least it didn't at the time. Obviously, the addition of the Blue Jackets is probably a net negative for being able to keep the crew.
The location of the crew, the Mapfre Stadium, as it's now known, it has been an issue. You know, the Columbus Clippers, the minor league baseball team, has done very well since it's moved their venue downtown. You know, within, you know, shouting a pebble throw from Nationwide Arena, where the Blue Jackets play. There's other stuff to do when you go down there, and there's probably a lot of people that just walk, you know, see the games going on and just walk in and buy some relatively cheap tickets to watch the Clippers.
Yeah, it cannot be emphasized enough how much the economics has changed in Major League Soccer over the last 20 years. When Columbus Crew built their stadium back in the late 90s, it was absolutely transformative and revolutionary for the entire league. This was a league that people didn't even know it was going to survive. It's playing, you know, obviously, the Crew are playing in the Horseshoe, 10,000, 15,000 fans in a 100,000-seat stadium. And, of course, that was the way every big team in MLS was doing. You know, they're playing in Giant Stadium, they're playing in the Rose Bowl, and having the soccer-specific stadium was just such a revolutionary step forward. The problem is the league was so poor at the time that you really had to put the cheapest possible stadium together. And so they ended up building a very bare-bones $30 million stadium. But again, at the time, you know, Columbus Crew Stadium was the mecca of professional soccer in the United States, a stadium dedicated totally towards soccer. Of course, they put it at the fairgrounds because it was cheap. They built it cheaply. It doesn't have the amenities of other things. Of course, in the last 20 years, Major League Soccer has absolutely exploded, and that means there's way, way more money in the sport to be able to build, again, not $30 million stadiums, but $150 million, $200 million, $300 million stadiums, and you can afford to put them on expensive real estate downtown instead of the cheapest possible real estate you can find at the fairgrounds.
Austin, though, even compared to Columbus's downtown, which is, you know, kind of blowing up, it's so popular, is still three times the cost of Columbus's.
Well, that's right, and let's also be very clear that Austin has not said that they are willing to put any money into a stadium either.
And, so, but he says that he doesn't want the money.
So I heard a pretty compelling analysis, potentially, is that that Austin may be just a stepping stone to somewhere else. Obviously, the reason Austin is in the picture at all is that the Crew are prevented from moving anywhere except for Austin.
Okay.
So if you want to move out of Columbus, your only opportunity is Austin. But if really your goal is to move to Detroit or is to move to San Diego or is to move to Sacramento or something like this, then the only way to get there is through Austin. And you know, that actually is maybe a little bit more advanced game of chess going on here, but, you know, maybe that's what ultimately is going on.
Because soccer does rake in the bucks?
It does rake in the bucks, at least in comparison to what it was doing when the Crew made their decision to build their stadium.
Mm-hmm.
We have people willing to pay hundreds of millions of dollars for franchises at this point. And again, when Major League Soccer started in '96, they were begging owners to come into the league. And of course, Lamar Hunt, who owned the Crew, this was not the only franchise he owned. Right? Of the original 12 franchises, six of them were just owned by two people. You know, again, now they can sell expansion rights for well over $100 million, and those expansion rights always come with a promise to build a new stadium. So it's a much different financial landscape now than it was in the past.
We have an email from Brad. He says, I totally agree that Precourt does not care about Columbus because he doesn't live here. And the thing is, as a businessman, he sees that his investment is floundering, in his opinion. I think that a deal could be made with MLS to allow the Crew to move and get another owner and a fresh team in here in the next year or two. That would be a good decision. That way we allow the disgruntled owner to leave and get a new local group owning and building a culture they're part of. Now, we just heard from the reporter from the Columbus Dispatch who says, nah, it's not that simple. You know, it's the league's not going to allow that. They already have expansions in play.
Well, so we can kind of compare what's going on in Columbus to what happened in Cleveland in the NFL 15 years ago.
Ooh.
There you had the Browns move, but they moved out of a very, very successful market in the dead of night. And the NFL knew that Cleveland was a very successful NFL market, and so they immediately put a new team back into the market once they had an upgraded stadium. The problem with Columbus is Columbus does not appear to be one of the most successful markets in MLS. And so a owner moving the team in the dead of night out of Columbus would probably not result in a new franchise coming in at all the same way that happened in Cleveland. So I would say that the economics don't look great for Columbus right now. Probably what's going to happen to save that team is either the taxpayers say, yes, we're willing to subsidize the team because we think that's a great amenity, not that it's worth dollars and cents to us, but it's worth it as an amenity to the city, or they say, you know, taxpayers should not be in the business of subsidizing millionaire owners and subsidizing professional sports, and they're going to let them go somewhere else, and then they will enjoy the Blue Jackets and they'll enjoy OSU.
Yeah, especially when you put it in terms of that longer game of chess that they may be contemplating, that analysis that you heard about, that changes everything. That makes sense. It wouldn't matter. There's nothing you could offer because the only way out is by way of Austin.
Yeah, you don't have to outbid. I mean, it's not that if that's really the game, it's not that you have to outbid Austin. It's that you have to outbid Detroit and Sacramento and Phoenix and San Diego and Charlotte and Cincinnati and, city after city. And that makes it a much tougher challenge for Columbus.
There's been worries about the Jackets leaving. They'll seem to have been put to rest lately. But can there be a domino effect? Could there be, just an exodus?
Well, there could be. The big difference is that Major League Soccer has at least five too few teams, where there are at least five and maybe more clear markets across North America that both want and can support a Major League Soccer team. On the other hand, the NHL probably has two or three too many teams, one of which might be the Blue Jackets, mind you. Mm-hmm. But there is not an obvious location for the Blue Jackets to move to. Now that Las Vegas is filled, maybe a Kansas City, but that's no better than they have. Seattle might be a location, but that's not a natural hockey place either. Mm-hmm. And of course, the most natural location for a hockey team is a second team in Toronto, but the league has been resisting that for not just years, but decades.
Yeah. How do you predict soccer's probably different than everything because it's such a new league in general, right? How would you have predicted beforehand? It was all a crapshoot anyways, right?
It certainly was. These folks, again, like Lamar Hunt, who mm-hmm. I have nothing but good things to say about, obviously previous owner, and I imagine lots of Columbus folks would agree with me. But these people absolutely gambled, and they gambled in a market that was not looking good for soccer. And before, remember, we had the old North American Soccer League, which mm-hmm. was at least at times enormously popular, guys like Pele and Beckenbauer playing here. But that whole league collapsed in 1984. So here are guys making multi-million dollar bets with no guarantee of success before. Lamar Hunt, I think, would be remarkably happy with the way that the league as a whole has turned out, if not so happy with the current situation with Columbus.
I thought it was interesting that the Columbus partnership has made an offer to, a 50%, if not buy the team outright, just to keep it here. I remember back in the day, the big shots around town weren't as welcoming to the Columbus Crew as they could have been. They weren't interested. Do you think that has a long-term impact on things like that?
Yeah, I don't know what to say on that. Certainly, it was such a big gamble. Obviously, you had big business ownership back then saying, boy, I don't know if I want to throw good money after bad here. Mm-hmm. Obviously, that would have been a great investment at this point. We've seen the franchise value skyrocket all across the league. Mm-hmm. And of course, that's what the current owner knows, is he knows he has a valuable asset. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately for the fans in Columbus, it looks like that asset is more valuable maybe in Austin, but certainly more valuable in a bunch of other locations around the country.
Victor Matheson, thanks so much for joining us. I really appreciate your insights today.
Of course, my pleasure for having.
Victor Matheson, professor of economics and accounting at the College of the Holy Cross. He studies economic impact of sports events and venues. Thanks to the All Sides staff, producer Michael DeBonis, assistant producer Shyla Knott, our All Sides interns, Kyle McKinnon, who produced this show, Courtney Gilbert, Dan Posniak, and Martin Coleman, with video production by Rich Blue and Amber Blue. Alan DiCenzo is the composer of our theme music. WOSU News and Public Affairs Director Mike Thompson, Radio Operations Director Kevin Petrilla, Senior Broadcast Technician Eric French. Be sure to like All Sides on Facebook, follow the show on Twitter at WOSU All Sides, and you can follow me as well at Ann Fisher, WOSU. Thanks so much for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.